What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. I've titled this one, Pick Me, because I talked with Kathy Derringer, and now we're talking with Tori Lindley, one of the two NATA presidential candidates for this upcoming election, which starts on Friday, I believe. Is that when the elections start, Tori?
First of the month. So is that Thursday or Friday?
Close enough.
September 1.
There you go. All right. So obviously I'm talking to Tori Lindley. Like I just said, Tori is at Northeastern, but it's Northwestern, right?
That would be correct.
Okay. Because Mike McKinney, he's been on here a couple times, is at Northeastern University in Boston. And that's not where you are. You're Northwestern in Michigan, right?
We are on the North Shore of Chicago. So great state of Illinois.
Okay. Illinois. Sorry. I'm a Texas boy. I'm true Texan. That's really all the bubble that I know is Texas. So everything else is foreign to me. So
no problem.
This is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Lindley, L-I-N-D-L-E-Y, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Lindley. And so you'll be able to get the contact information for Tori from there. Again, if you have questions on in the live chat, if you can see them on the Facebook. I've got some former students up here helping me while the rain is pounding the school, and right outside of us the gym is actually being used for a shelter because some people are being flooded out of their homes. And so my students are actually, Dom had his shorts wet and he got my chairs all wet, but he's here helping me. So thanks guys for helping me out with that. All right, Tori, let's get to you. How did you get into athletic training?
I actually started when I was a high school student, so it's exciting to hear about your program and the way that you're stimulating future athletic trainers, hopefully, and what a great career. And that was something that I was fortunate to be able to be exposed to as a high school student in a rural, very small high school in northern Michigan. And from there, I knew that that was a passion and knew that that's what I wanted to study as an undergraduate. So went directly on to Michigan State University and received my undergraduate degree there in athletic training.
Okay, so tell me a little bit more about, you said you were exposed to athletic training in high school. What does that mean?
Well, I had the chance to meet an athletic trainer who was working in a community a little larger than ours in Traverse City, Michigan. And he was putting on and hosting a course in the summer for sports medicine athletic training and invited local students from around the area. So I was exposed to the profession that way, and really it's been going strong for me ever since.
Okay, so you didn't have an actual athletic trainer on your campus then, but you just by chance went to a sports medicine workshop over the summer?
Correct. Again, the high school, my graduating class was 58 students, so very small, and we're talking back in the late 80s, if I can date myself. And so the exposure even at that time was, I guess, fortunate to even have a local community AT who was interested in getting students involved.
All right, very good. My story, I was just happened, like in junior high, they said, hey, if you want to be an athletic trainer, come fill out an application. Well, I had no idea what it was, but for some reason I went and filled out an application. Then they interviewed me, and then I became a student athletic trainer at Dobie High School and then on to Houston Baptist University. So it was really just kind of a random chance event because nobody in my family knew. Nobody said, hey, you should do this. I just did it for some reason. I don't know, weird, but we got a similar story, I guess. So, and actually it's very similar to Bill, my other coworker here. He started in junior high and he did some summer workshops with Kramer and that kind of stuff too. So very mm-hmm. cool. All right. So you graduated from, again, did you say Michigan?
Michigan State. Yeah.
Michigan State. So what happened after Michigan State?
I went directly on to graduate school. I knew that I wanted to pursue collegiate athletic training, knew that a graduate assistantship was the best opportunity for both the academics as well as the clinical refinement. And so the University of Minnesota was home for 2 years, received my master's degree there, and then went on to my first position as a Division III head athletic trainer at Hamline University.
All right, so first position, Division III, Hamline University. What happens after that to get you to where you are right now?
Well, a lot of different things, I think. In some cases, I built that path that I was interested in with a goal of becoming a head athletic trainer in the Big Ten Conference, and in other ways was fortunate because the positions needed to open when they opened for me. So really valued the time at Hamline University and the opportunity to run a shop of one AT and to build a strong physician group for those student athletes. And after 3 years there, my alma mater came calling, so I went back to Michigan State as a staff athletic trainer and did a number of things there administratively that were really important for me to set myself up for a head athletic training position. The first of which at the Division I level was at Eastern Michigan University, and I was there for 2 great years. Enjoyed my time in the MAC conference and a lot of great ATs in the MAC, and learned a lot from each of them, as well as had the opportunity there to build a staff and to really refine my skills as a supervisor and as someone who really enjoyed empowering others to be great. And then from there, this opportunity at Northwestern University came about. And so I've been here since 2002. I've grown our staff from 9 ATs to 19, and I've really enjoyed my time here at Northwestern.
All right, very good. So tell me a little bit about your position with the NATA currently.
Currently, I'm District 4's director and a member of the NATA Board of Directors. So among our 10 districts, I'm in my second to last year as district director in District 4 and with the GLADA. So I sit on the board of directors, and I'm also the NATA vice president.
I gotcha. All right. Now, you've done a good bit in athletic training, right? So you've built up programs. You were you went back to your alma mater. You've been in college athletics. You're sitting on the board for NATA vice president in GLADA. What do you feel has been your greatest accomplishment?
Professionally, I think the accomplishment is just to have the opportunity at those different leadership positions that you spoke of, and along the way, really enjoyed active participation and leadership opportunities at the state level in Minnesota and Michigan as the MATS vice president, and then here in Illinois as the state president of our association a few years back. And so each of those leadership opportunities have been kind of building blocks for better understanding the profession, better understanding the multiple settings from which ATs come from, and the multiple settings that we have yet to find our way into. And so I've really enjoyed the leadership component of my career. I think professionally, as I mentioned before, the area that's parallel with healthcare administration that I really enjoy is staff development and the opportunity to mentor and develop and to get the most out of the ATs that we're able to recruit and to work with at the different positions that I've been, both at Eastern Michigan as well as here at Northwestern University.
All right, so tell me just a little bit about some of the mentoring you do, some of the things that you do to really develop athletic trainers.
Oh, I love mentoring. I love that in any way, shape, or form that it comes. I think it's best done with some face-to-face communication opportunities, but I've got a number of other mentoring relationships, and I'm also feel blessed to be mentored by a number of fantastic athletic training leaders as well. And so short of, you know, be able to share coffee or a cup of tea, I think it's great to have periodic telephone calls. And with those calls, I challenge those that have mentored me with some questions. And I think those that I end up mentoring for them and for our relationship, mentor-mentee, it is important that they kind of challenge me. And I ask them as well to really think about values, to think about goals, maybe to write goals out and pencil it first, but then eventually turn those into ink. But you know, values and goals run very parallel along anybody's career, and life is going to throw different things throughout our careers. Different periods in our careers will be connected to different life events, and so I think much of what we strive for professionally, both day to day and the different patients that we serve, but also in volunteerism and leadership opportunities, being able to lean back in your values and be, you know, tied and connected to goals to motivate you and stimulate you is really important.
You know, I listen to Dave Ramsey a lot, and one of the podcasts I listen to, they talk about writing SMART goals. So like specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time bound. And so that's actually one of the things I implemented in my classroom, my high school classroom, my sports medicine one last year. And I'm going to do it again this year, is because those, as a freshman, if you learn to write and set a goal, then you can achieve that. You know, like I've talked before, I set a goal to bench press 300 pounds before spring break, and I did it because I was specific. I was intentional. I was looking at it and that kind of thing. And so I think that's a great, great thing to do for mentors. If you can encourage them and get them in the habit of writing down those goals, making them specific, and, you know, doing that kind of thing, that's great.
Yeah, I would agree. And the other thing that I encourage, in addition to writing them in the SMART format, is to keep them accessible. So if it's the corkboard behind your desk, or if it's the front drawer of your desk, some way in which they become visually accessible and a constant visual reminder of, you know, what you set out to do and all the reasons why you set out to do them.
Fantastic. All right, up to this point, No, you already said that. You said professionally your greatest accomplishment. Sorry, I got too involved in the conversation, forgot to follow my notes. All right, so we talk about mentoring, and those are some of the things, sitting on those boards as being some of your greatest professional accomplishments, being that leader. What do you feel has been your biggest challenge or your biggest struggle as an athletic trainer?
Boy, there's challenges day to day, and then there's challenges that I think all ATs are facing more universally. And some of those challenges have really just stimulated me. I've never really gotten down about some of the ways in which we've been challenged from a recognition standpoint, never really gotten down on the ways in which within the healthcare environment we've lacked the appropriate recognition for the things that we do. More so, it's been something that stimulated a lot of work at a lot of different levels to find ways in which we can reverse that, to find ways in which we can show our value as healthcare providers. And so those have been great opportunities to be in leadership positions to kind of turn the tables. And so, listening to those that are, working closely with us in interprofessional relationships and helping them to better understand the value of the AT, certainly helping the physicians outside of that inner circle of primary care and orthopedic physicians that without question value our skill set and understand what we do. But it's getting the word out in the communities and finding ways through not just NATA month each March, but other ways in which, we can take more of an aggressive approach to let others know not only who we are, but what we do and what we do really, really well.
Yeah, we talked with Jamie Woodall, part of the NATA Public Relations Chair, about that, extending it beyond March whenever we were there at the NATA conference. And again, it's not just March, but every day. And so figuring out a way to relate the public. I would think, for me personally, my biggest struggle is understanding others' perspective. Because for me, it's like, well, I know this is what I want to do, and I know this is what I'm going to do, and I know this is how I'm going to do it. It doesn't matter what you think. Well, because of my wife, she's so amazing. She's taught me to think about other people's feelings and emotions and the way that they perceive it. And I'm still struggling at that, right? I'm not very good at it. But because of our marriage relationship, I've learned that outside people need to understand from their perspective why this is important, not just because I told them it was, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
The why is so important. And that's something that we talk about a lot at the leadership level. And something we talk a lot about as our staff, as a staff group here at Northwestern. We're going to have unit goals. We're going to have unit, desires to move our program forward. And the why has to really be paramount to what we want to achieve. And then I talk to our staff a lot about the idea that if we hear the word no, no is just simply an opportunity for us to better educate whoever we're, trying to persuade as to why we want to achieve what we want to achieve. So in many cases, no can simply be an opportunity.
All right. So here is the hard question. Tori, from what you've told me, you don't have experience working in the secondary schools. Now, a lot of conversations that I see, there's secondary schools, athletic trainers feel left out. They feel out of the loop. They feel cast off by the NATA, right? So as a possible leader of the NATA, what are some of the ways that you're going to bring us in or incorporate or help secondary school athletic trainers feel part of the whole?
I love the setting. I had an opportunity in undergraduate work when I was a major in education to spend an entire semester in my student teaching rotation to spend time as well throughout, each afternoon and evening in that setting, and really wanted to be able to set myself up as a career option, as a career opportunity to be in the secondary school setting. So I certainly appreciate with multiple mentors as well as multiple colleagues who are in the setting, the challenges that exist. And so for me, in all the leadership positions that I've held, and certainly the opportunity that's going to exist as NATA president, is to be able to apply any number of different initiatives to that setting as a litmus. And what I mean by that is, there's just an overwhelming amount of challenges that the secondary school AT is up against for those secondary athletes and patients that are fortunate enough to have an AT. So if we simply look at and focus on those that are, buried in clinician to patient ratios that really just don't give the secondary school AT a chance to perform to their capabilities at the top of their skill set, one of our goals has to be to look very closely at the ways to expand the opportunities, sure, in the schools that don't have secondary school or in the schools that don't have ATs, but let's take a stronger look at those that have a single AT for over 1,000 athletes and find ways to stimulate the growth for the second and the third AT to really improve the job quality, to improve the setting. And so a lot of different initiatives that have come about and that will continue to come about where we've been able to show value, we've been able to get on the doorstep of some of the insurance companies to show the value to them, to hopefully have them in turn understand that there's no better risk manager, there's no better way to take care of that population and manage them day to day. Once the bell rings at 3 o'clock, then the AT. And so I think there's opportunities there. I think we've also shown that there are unique opportunities in the states that currently have licensure acts that allow for it, for the appropriate connection to revenue and the appropriate connection to billing to create some opportunities as well. So I think it starts by understanding and appreciating the issues. I know that our secondary schools athletic training committee is one of the most active committees we have. The membership of that group is really in tune with and has deep connections across the districts, but certainly beyond the districts, state to state, because the issues are different. And the issues that we're seeing can be very specific in one state and less of an issue in another. So I think the framework is in place. I think it's maybe worth investigating whether that committee has enough resources, identifying whether or not that committee can and should be expanded, given all the different initiatives that we as an NATA organization have partnered with KSI. And I think that's a really good example of where the NATA has responded to the needs of the secondary school AT. And I think that's another really good example of the ways in which the Atlas Project and simply being able to map where we currently stand, understanding that gives us a better chance to find out where we need to go. And so I love the work that we've done with Atlas. I love the work that the secondary schools athletic training committee has done and the things that they have planned for the future. And where those needs arise to add more resources to that, we absolutely will.
So a quick shout out to Jason Cates and Bart Peterson, both of them secondary schools athletic trainer committee. We're on the podcast when we were live at NATA. Again, I've been going through editing and all that stuff, but this is a special edition I wanted to get out to you as soon as possible. You mentioned looking at the work settings that have one athletic trainer rather than zero. Do you feel that it is a better inroads to get a second athletic trainer than to get a first athletic trainer?
I think I understand the question, and it's an intriguing one. You could hypothesize it, I guess, either way. You know, those that have a single AT and have shown that value, but have also shown that that person cannot be split among, you know, 12 different fields concurrently and really can't practice at the top of their skill set because they're simply triaging day in and day out, and or they're simply, you know, looking at healthcare that's event-based. So game after game after game after game. And so I guess you can make that argument that boots on the ground have a better opportunity to influence the decision makers. And then I guess the flip side to that is, you know, those that don't have care at all, you know, wow, what an important opportunity for us to do what we're doing already and do much more to create that chance for the first AT and some of those different districts to make a huge difference. So I think it's probably both.
All right, fair enough. If you're elected president, there's got to be one platform, one thing that you're number one looking for, one thing you want to accomplish. What would you say that one thing is?
Well, I wish there were just one, because there really is a lot more than just one. I think, you know, the opportunity to serve in this role really means that you're given the chance to work directly with a very talented board of directors. You're given the chance to interface with the BOC and with the Katie and with the foundation. So there are some advantages and some points of influence. But, you know, if you were to say, if you were to tell me you could only do one thing, I think it's job quality improvement. I do. I think that, and it wouldn't just be one thing. So if you ask me to prioritize or say, you know, again, as you did that one area, I think it's important that we do a really good job in understanding what those improvement points are in the different positions and the different settings that already exist. And that is a lot of different things. That's certainly salary, that's working conditions, that's finding a much more equitable in terms of what the gender expectations are for life balance. With life balance comes a number of things that improve positions. The eventual promotion of the medical model across all settings, including the secondary setting, will improve jobs. And so there are a number of components, fair employment practices and the way in which some of the contracted positions in the secondary schools and in college athletics need to be improved. And then just being better advocates for ourselves and standing up and saying, here's what I believe to be a better situation and here's how we can achieve it. So job improvement and job quality improvement has a number of key components to it. So I would put that as number one.
Yeah, I know in the NATA they have the resource. It says position improvement guide, and then like we discussed, the goal. What is your? That's the first thing it goes through is what do you want? So the job improvement or the quality job quality improvement is all relative to what you want. Do you want more time off? Do you want a bigger budget? Do you want an assistant athletic trainer? Do you want a sports medicine program? Do you want more CEU money? It's relative, but yeah, job quality improvement is a very good thing to kind of campaign for, to push for, because we all want a better work-life balance or, better life balance, whatever it is. So, all right. Now, it's important here. I want to know what you think the greatest strength for Kathy Derringer is.
Oh, Kathy's outstanding. I've really enjoyed the time that I've had that I've been given to serve with her on the NATA Board of Directors. She was a fantastic treasurer of our association for two terms, and Kathy's record speaks for itself as it pertains to the tremendous job she's done specifically in the setting of sports medicine clinics and understanding and helping other athletic trainers to understand how business from the athletic trainer's perspective can and could and should be. And so I really respect the work that she's done with COPA and the work that she's done on a number of different work groups to push the AT value model forward and to help a lot of athletic trainers who are interested in, in that side of athletic training, the business side of athletic training, to appreciate and understand the ways in which you can go about that.
All right. Very good. She had positive words to say about you, but I'll let you listen to the podcast to find out what those are.
That's a good teaser.
All right. So if you had to leave athletic training today, what would be the greatest memory that you've had?
I think all the time that I've been able to share in that work-life setting with my entire family. I think we remember the times when our kids get to share sideline space with us, or, time on different trips, just time around the athletic training room and being raised in the rehab pools and being raised, maybe not folding towels as much as I wish, but unfolding towels and smacking ace wraps on each other. So, I think that type of integration, I think, helps all of us to really enjoy what we do. And so when I close my eyes, those are some of the things that I see. And I've got my youngest starts her senior year in high school, youngest of three today, actually. So, from a memory of them as children and their childhood, those are a few years back, but those tend to be the fondest.
Very good. I love when my kids come up here. And, the other day I had my son up here. He had a lemonade stand outside the athletic training room selling Gatorade, just because he was been wanting to do it. But it was honestly 98 degrees outside, and I wasn't going to sit outside on the corner while he was selling lemonade. So we brought him up here. But just being part of it, him running, hey, Dad, can I go in the gym? And he's just sitting there shagging balls for volleyball, that kind of thing. Just being part of what we're doing. They're riding around on the golf cart. I think those, I agree, would be my greatest memories, is the way that my family's been able to be involved as well. So
I love it. That's great.
All right, Tori, last thing. This is, again, about a way to kind of help people either pick you or pick Kathy, make an informed decision. So what are some final takeaways or final points that you would like to make before we wrap this up?
Well, I would just look forward to the opportunity to be energetic, to be positive, and to be responsive. I think great leaders find that the more you listen, the better you're going to be as a leader. And as I mentioned earlier, this position really just gets the chance to work with a number of other great leaders in our fantastic association of multiple volunteers and 42 plus staff members at the NATA office. And so it's more of a with thing than it is an individual thing. And so, again, working with that talented group has been a goal of mine for a number of years. And with that comes the opportunity to empower and inspire others and be responsive to the needs of our members in all of our different settings.
Very good. All right. So you said you want to be responsive. Best way to get a hold of you is at email, is that Twitter, is that phone?
The email is great for me. It's you know, it's my best opportunity to kind of start that meaningful conversation. And oftentimes that turns into a even more meaningful phone call, but email is absolutely the best way.
All right. And that email is Tory, T-O-R-Y at northwestern.edu.
It is.
All right. So that's good. I mean, that's an easy one because I know Sean Reedy, when he was at Rice, it was STR3 at Rice. And I'm like, what the heck? Why? All right. So Tory at northwestern.edu. And again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Linda Lee. So if you can't remember that, or if you need to look it up later, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Lindley. And then that'll also have a link to his Twitter, which is at Tory Lindley. Or he said his office phone. Again, I have a link to that there, 847-491-8867. Best way is probably to email him and set up a time to phone call. Ask him your questions, you know, and if he responds, good. Take that into consideration as you make your vote. If he doesn't, then again, take that into consideration as you make your vote. So hopefully this is an opportunity for you to be informed, to get to know Tory and Kathy just a little bit as you vote for your leadership as an athletic trainer, as a member of NATA, and as we continue to improve the position of athletic trainers in the medical model in whatever their setting is. So again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Lindley. I am Jeremy Jackson. Tory, I thank you for being on the podcast, being on the Sports Medicine Broadcast, taking your time out of your day and working around all the schedule changes that I've had because of the weather here in Houston.
No, Jeremy, actually, thank you. I know it's been crazy down there with the weather. So continued thoughts and prayers to you and everybody in the community. And thanks for producing this and all that you do to promote our great profession.
Yes, sir. Well, you have a good day.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.